Well, this is crazy. Liam Cohn, remember we were talking about how he was not going to be interviewing for Jacksonville's head coaching job anymore, and that meant that Robert Saleh was the favorite to land in Jacksonville and probably not with the 49ers for the defensive coordinator spot. Liam Cohn ghosted Tampa Bay today, the team everybody thought he was going back to, and apparently flew back to Jacksonville to meet with their owner, Shad Khan, and it appears that Liam Cohn is again the favorite for Jacksonville's job, which by extension means that Robert Saleh might be available to take the 49ers defensive coordinator job. And it all only happened, apparently, allegedly, because Trent Baalke got fired, the former 49ers GM. This is all a lot to unpack, so I had to bring in the expert. I had to bring in the big guns today. Brad Graham at the SF Niners joins us for the first time in a couple months. And absolutely nothing to talk about, right, Brad? Always a quiet day on the 49ers block.
You know how it goes in the offseason, Dave, but there's never anything to talk about. But, of course, here we are, and I appreciate being able to link up with you on this stream. Always a great time chatting 49ers with you. And it's crazy how the 49ers world right now is so intertwined with this head coaching search going on with the Jaguars. I mean, you even mentioned it, the throwback to Trent Baalke, the former general manager. And, you know, I think I speak for a lot of fans who kind of hold a certain perception of Trent Baalke, but it seems crystal clear that the rest of the league holds a very similar perception as well. And it's just been a wild 24 hours, right? Because we hear, oh, he's pulling his name out of the job. He's not going to have that second interview. He's going to become one of the highest paid coordinators with the Bucs to remain. And then boom, they fire Baalke. And then he's back into the driver's seat as being the top guy for that head coaching job, which of course has the impact on Robert Saleh. So what a wild, I'm not sure I've really experienced a coaching search like this, like at least covering the 49ers. I mean, we've gone through our fair share of coaching searches, but this one has been an interesting one to land on a DC, which might be their number one choice after all.
Especially since it's a coordinator search, right? Normally, right, you wouldn't have this kind of drama, but they're competing with head coaching searches for this coordinator. It's an unusual position because Saleh has interviewed at three spots to be a head coach and for the 49ers to be a defensive coordinator. Also, the Raiders previously for Robert Saleh last week, but this one with Jacksonville was going to be a second interview. Raiders and Cowboys and Jacksonville. Apparently, he had the second interview scheduled for tomorrow, for Friday, and he was supposed to fly to Jacksonville today. I'm not sure if that even happened. That's how much limbo we're in right now, because we've just learned that Liam Cohn's been meeting with Jacksonville all day today. So maybe Saleh's still scheduled for tomorrow. Maybe they're going to proceed with that. Or maybe halfway through this show, we're going to learn that Liam Cohn has signed to be the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, which would theoretically clear the path for Robert Saleh to come to the 49ers to be the defensive coordinator. But before we go down that path, I'm so curious as to how this whole Baalke thing worked out, because the Jags received a lot of criticism, rightfully so, for firing Trent Baalke yesterday, well after they fired the head coach, Doug Peterson, in the middle of this coaching search. So it's obvious from the outside that they saw that Ben Johnson didn't want to come there. He ended up signing with the Bears. Aaron Glenn didn't even want to interview with Jacksonville. And then I think the straw that broke the camel's back was Liam Cohn saying, thanks, but no thanks. I'm just going to go take a coordinator job instead. I think that finally made Jacksonville realize maybe this Trent Baalke guy is a toxic asset around the organization. And we've covered the 49ers. We know that he's survived a lot of head coaches. Whenever you start surviving too many head coaches, I don't think that's a great sign. And after he survived Doug Peterson, it took a few more weeks. Maybe it took this head coaching search, but I think that Shad Khan and Jacksonville realized the same thing.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think you hit the nail right on the head, because is it really an attractive job? Yes, they have the young franchise quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. We know that even though he's had kind of ups and downs to the early portion of his career, he's a high upside quarterback, and he has the potential to be really good. They have Travis Etienne. They have Brian Thomas Jr., just the electric wide receiver on the outside who's just so fast and pairs so well. Evan Ingram, even Strange, the backup tight end, shows a lot of promise. So they have a ton of offensive weapons, and they have a pretty solid foundation to build upon. But when you're looking at the general manager and he's kind of rotating through coaches, we all kind of understand the writing on the wall, right? Is because eventually ownership will look at that general manager and be like, it might be time just for a clean sweep. Let's get a new general manager and a new head coach. And so to be able to be tied to a general manager like Trent Baalke, it's kind of like walking on eggshells a little bit, because the fact that Trent Baalke was already on thin ice with ownership. And if you come in and you have, let's say, a bad year in your first season as a head coach, we know it's what have you done for me lately type of league, right? The NFL stands for not for long. And they could just easily make a switch to be able to get a general manager, head coach paired together to take over. So I think it's the smart move. I think they needed to do it right away. I think that would have been the smartest move, was right after the season ends, just clean house and start the search from scratch. And who knows what they would have wound up with. But it still sounds like the Jags will end up with one of their top targets. And it's a pretty cool little setup. I mean, it'll be interesting to see who the general manager is, if it remains to be their interim GM who has 49ers ties. But I think at minimum, it's a clean slate now for the new head coach. So I think it completely changes the perception of the job. And you kind of now feel like, all right, maybe we have a little bit more security to be able to do what we want, have our bumps and bruises in that first year in order to build something. So moving on from Trent Baalke, I'm curious about, did Liam just say, hey, I'm not going to take this job?
Yeah, you want to know exactly how it went down. Did he say that, or did Jacksonville finally develop some self-awareness after Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, and Liam Cohn all effectively turned them down? Whichever way they got to that conclusion is good for their franchise, and I think you have an awesome point in that the head coach and GM for success, or the probability of success to be maximized, need to be hired together. So the 49ers were able to do back in 2017 when they finally hit the reset button from Trent Baalke, right? Baalke survived Harbaugh, Jim Tomsula, and then Chip Kelly came in, and then they fired both of them. And that was a good decision from Jed York. He said, I need to blow this whole thing up. I need to start fresh. You are asking for a power struggle if the head coach and the GM are not interconnected from the very start. We saw with Rand Carthon coming over to the Tennessee Titans. Mike Vrabel was already there. Vrabel lasted one more year. They fire Vrabel. They bring in Brian Callahan. And then after the second year, they fire Rand Carthon. Why? Because there was a power struggle at the very top. So you are just planting the seeds for a power struggle if you do not start this with the head coach and the GM on the same page. You have organizational unity. And Jacksonville, it took them the interview process to figure it out, but they will have organizational unity. Now, one more really fascinating twist here is that Ethan Waugh is the interim GM, and that is somebody who was in the 49ers building for almost two decades in the scouting department. He actually bridged the Trent Baalke era and the John Lynch era. So the minute that he became the interim GM yesterday, and we didn't know about Liam Cohen coming back to Jacksonville yet, we figured, ooh, he's overlapped with Robert Saleh, so there might be a higher chance now of Robert Saleh taking the Jacksonville job. But we also have to say, now that we have more information, that it probably was Ethan Waugh working to bring Liam Cohen back into the interview mix for the Jags. So it's all really interesting. And now we've got another update. This is coming from Diana Russini, that Robert Saleh never left New Jersey for Jacksonville. He was planning on flying to Jacksonville for the interview, but the plans are fluid. And now Jordan Schultz reports that Robert Saleh just landed in Jacksonville for what was supposed to be an interview tomorrow with the Jags. So wait, they're conflicting reports.
Mike Silver saying that Robert Saleh did not, in fact, fly to Jacksonville today. So,
and that's what Diana Russini was saying as well.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Here's Mike's tweet. I'm opening it up right now. Okay. So Mike Silver. So this situation is so wild that we're getting conflicting reports on whether or not Robert Saleh flew down to Jacksonville today. Diana Russini and Mike Silver both say that he did not. Schultz said that he did, but has landed and doesn't know what to do. it just gives you an idea of how much of a mess this all is right now. Either way, I think overall the 49ers' chances of landing Robert Saleh are much higher in our estimation right now than they were about 90 minutes ago.
Absolutely. I know 49er fans are with chatting with them all throughout the day, and for the last, 24 hours or so, it was looking pretty bleak there, because I know you saw your colleague, Tim Kawakami from the SF Standard, put out that little nugget about how there were some potential conversations going on internally about maybe Pete Carroll and maybe having to look for plan B, C, and D outside of maybe Brandon Staley. But everything seems to be aligning with Robert Saleh not being the head coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So very, very interesting, because you do have Silver and Russini both reporting very, very similar things. And I know they've been super plugged in on a lot of this stuff regarding breaking some of the news with the coaching moves. So, I mean, what they're reporting is absolutely in line with everything that we're seeing happening. And I'm sure it at least would make sense to me from a professional standpoint if the Jacksonville Jaguars have known throughout the majority of today that Liam Cohen was the guy that they were after and they were making some movement. It would make sense to probably a professional courtesy, but it looks like we're going to get our guy. So maybe you don't need to add, the flight miles to get down over here to Jacksonville. So we'll see how it goes, but it's definitely trending in the 49ers direction in regards to getting Saleh as the next DC.
We have some more context. This is from Rob Stroud, who covers the Bucks. He's got a little bit more detail on the whole Liam Cohen ghosting situation. He tweets, to be clear, the Liam Cohen contacted head coach Todd Bowles of Tampa Bay around 5 p.m. Thursday. I'm guessing that's Eastern time. He said he had been with one of his kids who had taken ill at a doctor's office. He mentioned the Jaguars situation only briefly, saying he wanted to look back into it. So they didn't hear from him all day, really. They didn't hear from him at all until he contacted Todd Bowles, technically still his boss, the head coach, at 5 p.m. Eastern, and said that his kid had been sick and that he wanted to check back in with the Jags. And then it sounds like he quickly hung up after that. It doesn't sound like, according to these tweets, it doesn't sound like there was really full transparency here from Liam Cohen. But this is a man with leverage. The Bucks want him, and it appears that the Jags want him. And could he have been more transparent? I guess, but I get it. He's getting tugged in different directions, and then now he realizes it's all under the national magnifying glass. But whether or not his kid was in the doctor's office or whatever, I mean, this is
where's your doctor like this. This is crazy. But it's super entertaining, right? Like, we were kind of talking offline about this. There's always something to keep us going in the off season. And with this whole situation playing out, I mean, at the end of the day, it just seems like it's headed towards where the 49ers wanted it to go. So it's a great spot. And I think one of the biggest things that I'm most excited about the potential return of Robert Saleh, I think with the last 2 years of DCs, whether it was Steve Wilks or whether it was Sorensen, it just felt like Kyle Shanahan couldn't focus on his side of the football, which is offense. Now, we understand he is a head coach and he is responsible for everything under the umbrella of the San Francisco 49ers from a football perspective. But I do believe that he has had to overextend himself into the defensive side, just how we've seen things be managed. So I think by getting a guy hopefully, of Robert Saleh's caliber back into the building, into a situation where he knows the coaches, he knows the culture, he knows everything that is required to run a Super Bowl caliber defense. It is going to allow, in my opinion, Kyle Shanahan to get back to what he does best and getting into the lab and being able to focus on the offensive side of the football while knowing he's got healthy collaboration on the other side with Robert Saleh. So I think that's one of the more exciting things about this particular development. I know some fans have kind of gone back and forth about it, but I think that's one of the more positive elements of this is that, man, we can separate the responsibilities and get back to having a really competitive, collaborative environment. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. The defense, which was the number two unit in the league under Saleh in 2019, so they were elite. And I mean, some data even suggests that was a historically good defense. We could talk about that in a bit, but he saw results when he had his guys healthy. And in 2020, even when his guys weren't healthy, that remained the top 10 defense, which I think that earned him the Jets job. Like, right. They had a lot of talent in 2019. That was impressive. I think Joe Woods on that staff as the DB's coach and the mixed coverages that the 49ers were able to throw in there really helped. But what Saleh was able to do after Woods left and after Nick Bosa got hurt in 2020, you can't argue with those results. And I think that's put into fuller perspective by 2024. When this defense was also banged up, I don't think it was quite as injured as 2020 because they still had Bosa for most of the year, and it plummeted to the lower 20s. I mean, the bottom fell out for the defense this past year. So I think that appreciation for what Saleh was able to do to hold that defense together in 2020 should have been generated by how much they struggled in 2024. Now, the bigger trend here is that over the past 2 years, they've had a below average run defense, and I would say a bad run defense. But they were number 26 in run EPA in 2023 under Steve Wilks for the first time really since the start, since 2017, 2018. Even then, they might have been slightly above average, but they were number 26 last year, and they dropped to number 29 under Nick Sorensen. And Brad, you know the game so well. You've got the lineman's background. You watch all the tape, and I think a lot of people on the outside, they look at the pass game and they think if you could pass and if you could stop the pass, everything's fine, but just not how it works at the core. If you can't run, and then especially on defense, if you can't stop the run, you really can't stop anything consistently. It's at the very core of what you do. So even if Brandon Staley did a good job working with the DBs this year, even if Demo Lenore had a good season, and with pass breakups and with interceptions or whatever, if you can't stop the run consistently, which the 49ers couldn't, the defense is going to crater. And it did this year. So I think whoever the 49ers bring in, and Saleh might be the favorite, I know he's their top choice, they've got to get back to what they were doing when Saleh and D'Amico Ryans were at the top of the defense, and that is stopping the run. I think that's the basis for everything.
I think you're 100% right. You hit the nail right on the head. I think we're even seeing that trend kind of come to fruition in the playoffs with teams who can run the ball when they want to run the ball. And even on the inverse, you saw the 49ers offense struggle this year when they wanted to run the ball in the end zone and they couldn't punch it in. And I just think that either, like you had mentioned, being able to run the ball or stop the run is at the foundational element of how you need to build the team. And I think that's why when you look at what the 49ers have been able to do since they took over under Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch is a huge emphasis on the defensive line. And obviously last year they took a huge hit. I know fans have been kind of upset with Javon Hargrave and what he was able to bring to the table, but the 49ers were heading into that year relying on him to be a huge piece on the interior of that defense. And when you lose him, you lose Arik Armstead, and you're running out guys like Jordan Elliott, Evan Anderson, Kalia Davis. And, you know, I do like what Malik Collins was able to do, but I view him more as a kind of a situational pass rusher. Mm-hmm. When you lose that run stuffing three tech, man, it really inhibits a lot of things because that means you're not getting those doubles at the point of attack. The guards are free flowing to linebacker, picking off Fred Warner. They're picking off D Winters, Devondre Campbell when he was here. So it just makes it a challenge for teams when you really got to be able to stop the run. And because we know, David, when you get teams in third and long, it takes them out of their comfort zone. It takes them out of where they want to be, and it really disrupts their rhythm. And that starts with stopping them with the typical run on first down and getting them playing behind the sticks, which conveniently happened to the 49ers offense last year. So if they can reverse both of those things, I think the 49ers get back on track in a hurry.
Well, here's a number for you, or a set of numbers for you. In essentially every single season since 2020 up until this past year, the 49ers offense had been top five in first down run efficiency. The only time that they weren't prior to this season was over the first half of 2022. That is such a big, big key for the 49ers, and you'll see why right now. Once Christian McCaffrey showed up in the back half of 2022, they got right back to top five in first down run efficiency. The offense turned into the number one offense in the league. 49ers pass offense consistently, 2021, 2022, 2023, when that first down run efficiency had been in place, the pass offense was a top five pass offense. This past season, they dropped to number 20 in first down run efficiency. And, you know, we'll talk about Brock Purdy if people want us to talk about Brock Purdy, but he still held it together despite the fact that they didn't have the running base of the Shanahan scheme that they normally have. And we could point at several different, you know, reasons why the run fell off. I think the top reason is that the guy that you're counting on to be there, Christian McCaffrey, wasn't available for most of the season. I mean, he fixed the running offense almost single-handedly back in 2022 when he showed up. So that was big. But yeah, you being the line expert that you are, you've talked about it, that there has been a regression in certain parts of the 49ers offensive line. It's kind of interesting to me because it's almost like a game of whack-a-mole that they've been playing over the past couple years. The right side had been weaker in 2023. I thought the right side got a lot better. I think Colton McKivitz is amazing value for his contract at right tackle. I don't think that he's the glaring issue at all for the 49ers. I think people are misidentifying that. I actually think the interior, especially interior shading toward the left, had become a little bit bigger issue this year. Plus the fact that Trent Williams was out. So that means your interior shading left all the way to left tackle was not what it was in 2023.
That was my exact read on it as well. And I really think, you know, what we saw from Dominic Pooney, I mean, what a revelation to see a third-round rookie come in and play as well as he did. But the thing about offensive line play, David, as you know, is it's a team within the team. Those five guys, they got to play together. And then within those five, you have your right guard, right tackle combo. You got your left guard, left tackle combo. You got your guards and your centers. There's all these little mini games that are being played on the inside. And when you plug in a player like Dominic Pooney to the right side, it's not a surprise to see Colton McKivitz's game also elevate. It was his second year as a starter. So you already would think he would improve based on that. And so when you saw the combination of the two, they really played well in tandem. But you're totally right on that left side. And, you know, really struggled running behind Aaron Banks. I think Aaron Banks is a better pass blocker than he is a run blocker. And I think for whatever reason, just took a step back this year. And even with Jake Brendel as well, he had his moments where he started out rough, kind of got it back on track, and then kind of fell off the wagon again. And all it takes really is one offensive lineman to not be playing their best ball for the whole unit to kind of struggle. And when you have two guys that are kind of inconsistent with kind of the situation that was happening on the outside, you know, with Trent Williams or Jalen Moore coming in, and to Jalen Moore's credit, he played pretty well this year.
Yeah. He made some money. He did.
But
get
look at the biggest issues on the offensive line, I kind of look at that center left guard combo. It's really how it kind of came together. And it was a step back from what we had seen. And you mentioned Christian McCaffrey makes things a lot easier on your
Brad froze up on me there. You there, Brad? You guys seeing Brad right now? Or are you guys hearing Brad? I think I lost him. Mike, do you?
Oh,
he's back now. There you are.
Am I dropping out?
You froze for a second. You were just frozen in time. Did you see that alligator? Did you see that alligator? It was going viral on social media because down in Florida that they had that crazy blizzard, and there was literally an alligator that was frozen under the water, like frozen in the water. Yeah, so you were like the alligator that was frozen there for a little bit, but you came back to life.
What did I cut out on?
You were talking about the center and the left guard of the offensive line and identifying that as the point of the offensive line that was regressed this year. And I was thinking as you were saying that you know, we could talk all about the pass blocking and the run blocking and what we see on the surface and all that's true, but there's another layer to this, and that is what the center is identifying. And I think especially against the Dolphins this year, that was a huge struggle for the 49ers. But we can go back to the Super Bowl against Kansas City, Super Bowl 58 in Vegas, where the Chiefs had 9 unblocked pressures, like literally unblocked pressures, a lot of those coming on Spagnuolo blitzes. There seemed to be identification issues by the 49ers up front. And then we go to the game against the Dolphins where Calais Campbell came in on the stunt and nobody picked him up. He ran right by Jake Brendel. In this system, a lot of that, maybe all of it, goes back to the center. And with these defenses are getting aggressive now, everybody but the 49ers, which is why they're changing defensive coordinators. But defenses are bringing multiple guys, and you have to be able to identify where those guys are coming from. And if there is going to be a tricky stunt up front, the center needs to be on top of everything. And I feel that all too often at critical junctures, the 49ers protection just wasn't on top of things. And that was a huge issue for this offense, not only this season, but also in the Super Bowl against Kansas City. And it's something they're going to have to firm up over this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest trends that was kind of unfortunate to watch play out throughout the season was the way that they were taking advantage of the 49ers offensive line rules. They were figuring out how to get the offensive line to get their protection calls sliding left or sliding right, and they would basically just drop out the opposite side and bring numbers on the backside, and they would just get free rushers time and time again. And it really played into the struggles of the 49ers throughout this whole year. And it starts with the center, but I think, you know, it's also an adjustment that needs to be made to not keep finding themselves in those particular looks. Because I think one of the staples of the Kyle Shanahan offense is he's always taken advantage of their rules, right? Mm-hmm, that's always been the thing that has made him the mad scientist, the mad genius, all that stuff. And it felt like that flipped this year. So whether that's the center, whether that's the overall rules of the offensive line, and as you know, David, because of the success that Kyle Shanahan's offenses have had and the coaching tree that follows along with their same offensive principles, it's not that foreign to these defensive coordinators anymore. They get to practice against it all day throughout training camp, and they get to figure out, oh, this is how we attack this defense or this offense. This is how we use their rules against them. And so a little bit of, you know, and as we know, as the NFL, it's constantly evolving. And the best coaches and the best teams figure out how to stay fresh and figure out how to basically mitigate those issues and keep moving forward for sure.
It is an ongoing chess match. I am reading this right now. Highly recommend it.
Okay.
If you haven't yet. This is the comprehensive book on Bill Walsh. And I just got to this part of it. I have to read you 2 lines. It's awesome. So in 1981, they hired George Seifert to be their defensive backs coach. By the way, I had a text title on this. Let's see if I still have it available for us. George Seifert's 85th birthday. Happy birthday to him was yesterday. This is timely. But in 83, Bill Walsh promoted George Seifert from DB coach despite the fact that he was relatively inexperienced, only 2 years, to defensive coordinator. And this is what Bill Walsh based his decision on. They had gotten shredded by San Diego and Dan Fouts the previous season. So that convinced Bill that his team needed to be far more sophisticated in its pass defense schemes. Even though Seifert had only 2 years of NFL coaching experience, Bill Walsh thought that he was the man to make that transformation. And then Bill Walsh said, he put together a style of defense that was fully dimensional with a flexibility that enabled it to deal effectively with new and varied offenses. So even back in 1983, and trust me, this hadn't stopped in the 40 plus years since, even back in 1983, this chess match was going on. And this chess match has continued to go on. And the guy that we talked about yesterday, Pete Carroll, thanks to your video, we found out that he met George Seifert at the NFL Combine. That was great work by Brad. That was what, 3 or 4 years ago at the Combine, I'm guessing?
I think that was 2 years ago.
Two years ago, yeah. So this chess match, the moves, the counter moves, you could trace it back to the start of time, and it's going to continue happening. And then it manifests itself in these fascinating coaching location changes. And we have another update here from this entire situation. Let me read this one. Diana Russini, what changed for Liam Cohn? He got on the plane to Jacksonville after Jags ownership called him directly and explained they will let him pick the GM and would pay him Ben Johnson level money along with multiple years. And according to Pro Football Talk, Ben Johnson's contract with the Chicago Bears is worth around $13 million a year. That would make him the seventh highest paid head coach. So this is what we're dealing with. I think Tampa Bay was talking about $4.5, $5 million for Liam Cohn to come back there, which would be top-end coordinator money. So I get why he ghosted Tampa Bay, because he's talking about $8 million more per year. Right. Like, this is, if he signs the deal for 4 years, that's like $32 million guaranteed. So, yeah, I think most of us would ghost the former employer in that case as well. But anyway, that was what happened. And it does sound like he wanted his own GM. He didn't want Balky there. And once he left, the Jags were like, OK, we're going to fire him. Come back.
It's just a crazy, crazy situation, man. Every time you think you've seen it all in the NFL, something new happens, something crazy happens. And hey, I get it. You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're desperate to be a winner, and they've been kind of a bottom feeder in the league for a long time. And they just really want to be at the top of relevance. And so they're willing to exhaust all options. I mean, you know, some might call it malpractice, but at the end of the day, you got to tip your cap to Shad Khan. He's doing whatever it takes to get the guy he wants in the building. Will it be a successful move in the end? We'll find out. But he is doing whatever he can to get his top coaching choice. So, hey, it works for the 49ers, though, because that means, I mean, everything is clearly pointing to Robert Saleh is not going to be getting that job most.
Yes. We had you freeze again. I could talk until he unfreezes. I think the 49ers are very likely to bring Robert Saleh back as they, oh, you're back. Good.
There we go.
I was finishing your thought. I said the 49ers are exceedingly likely to bring Robert Saleh back as their defensive coordinator. It's gone as far as Mike Silver just tweeting, I expect the 49ers to rehire Robert Saleh as their defensive coordinator soon. I'm not sure if that's news because we're saying the same exact thing, but worth saying that Mike just tweeted that. You did freeze up there for a second, so I'm not sure how your thought finished, but if I did a good job, you could let me know.
You did a great job. I apologize for the McDonald's Wi-Fi over here. It's it's not doing me too well today. It was holding up well for the most of the day, though.
Yeah, you've had a lot of news to go through. I mean, we've been talking about so much just in general as people who talk about the 49ers ever since the season ended just a couple weeks ago. It's been, I think we expected it to be relatively busy throughout at least the first 2 weeks, but we didn't expect this level of drama. There have been a lot of twists and turns, and we're not even at the final destination yet. Remember, the 49ers still have to hire a special teams coordinator too. So they've conducted a few interviews. it's been a while now that we've gathered that they're set on Robert Saleh as their top pick. Then there was the drama of this week that made them maybe a little nervous that, that Robert Saleh wouldn't be available. So we talked about Pete Carroll. But I think all things considered, let's go back to the basics. When Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch spoke at the end of the regular season, they emphasized that adaptability was going to be important for the defensive coordinator. So that's why I brought out the Bill Walsh book talking about George Seifert. They emphasized that experience was going to be important. And I think since then, we've also gathered that energy is going to be important. So if adaptability, experience, and energy are your three main pillars, Robert Saleh is your dream candidate because obviously he's shown adaptability. We watched what he did in 2020. Obviously his experience, he's the one that implemented the system. He is the guy that did it himself. And obviously has energy because he became a meme in 2019 with how fired up he was on the sideline. So he checks all of those boxes for the 49ers.
Absolutely. I mean, I just think back, you remember, I think it was kind of like the Robert Saleh era around 2019 where the get back coach was, you know, came to the forefront, and it was because of the energy like Saleh. Of Robert Saleh, because he was going onto the field, ready to go tackle someone basically. And they have to have a coach to keep bringing them back because they don't want to get a penalty because he gets into the path of the referees. So I think the energy aspect of it is such a huge element. And it's such a welcomed return, hopefully. But, man, all the updates that continue to come out, just it seems like it's Robert Saleh going to be the next DC. Now, obviously, the final dominoes have to fall for it to be official. But that energy is absolutely going to be welcomed in the building, especially after coming off guys like, and you would know this absolutely from speaking to Steve Wilks and Nick Sorensen, very kind of mellow level guys. They don't seem to get too high, get too low, just kind of right there in the middle, where Saleh, oh, he's going to let you know how he's feeling, good or bad. And I think especially with defensive players who have to lock into a bit of a different gear than maybe offensively, where you, like you mentioned, it is very much a chess match on the offensive side, where sometimes on the defense, it's about pinning your ears back and getting after the football. And sometimes a nice jolt of energy can really help get that going. So I'm excited to see what we get here.
All gas, no brakes. That's absolutely Robert Saleh's thing. Remember that? So you talk about all the energy. You talk about the sideline guy having to hold Robert Saleh back. This should bring back good memories for the 49ers fans watching. The game where he first became truly visible was 2019. It was week 6. It was at the LA Coliseum against the Rams. The 49ers were undefeated, but everybody said the Rams had been to the Super Bowl the year prior. 49ers were going into the house of the defending NFC champions who had beaten them, I think it was 41-10 or 40-10 the year before, the last time that they had met. They played in week 18, but that or week 17. But when they met during the middle of the regular season in 2018, it was a complete drubbing in favor of the Rams. So the 49ers were this hot team at the start of 2019, but they needed to go down and prove it against the Rams. And it was Saleh's defense that delivered a goal line stand. They stuffed the Rams. Might have been Todd Gurley on fourth down at the Coliseum on the road in front of 70 to 80% 49ers fans, but who's counting? And then they panned over to Robert Saleh. First to Jimmy Ward, who was flexing there on the goal line, and then the Robert Saleh, who had to be restrained as he was coming onto the field. And that was the moment. That was the moment that the 49ers 2019 run was christened, right? That we knew that it was real at that moment. And Robert Saleh was the face of it. So I understand why there's this emotional connection to a coach who was very successful with San Francisco. And it looks right now like they're on track to bring him back as the defensive coordinator.
You brought me right back to that moment, and you did such a great job of painting the picture. But yeah, that I remember that like it was yesterday. And that was such a energizing moment for a franchise that, you know, was coming off of Trent Baalke's reign you know, trying to really understand what the future was going to look like with Kyle Shanahan. And, you know, with the down year in 2017, obviously you saw the energy that they brought in that, even in a losing season. You saw how they finished that year, and then you lose Jimmy Garoppolo early on in 2018. And man, 2019 was just such a special year, and man, really led in large part due to that defense led by Robert Saleh. And absolutely, that energy was infectious. And I think the 49ers have been missing it dearly. Absolutely.
We got a couple questions here, or it's a super chat. Frequent listener, great show, thank you. And then here's a question from Corey. Is it possible that we see other changes to the 49ers defensive staff? It's always possible, but if you bring in Robert Saleh, big changes are less likely. Because remember, when Saleh left, Chris Kocurek was already there. They worked really well together. I think that it depends on the type of changes that you're talking, big or small. You're almost always going to see some minor changes. And then the big changes depend on who the actual coordinator is.
Yeah, no, I agree with you as well. I think one of the big draws for Kyle Shanahan is to be able to maintain the defensive staff, to be able to keep the same structure that they have behind the wide nine and Chris Kocurek, you know, being able to keep, you know, Johnny Holland and a lot of the other defensive coaches. So that's one of the appeals of Robert Saleh is, you know, he was a part of building that staff. And so it's going to be really nice to be able to see that continuity kind of pick right back up. And I think it would actually be better to be able to keep that staff together that he has experience with and be able to basically just hop right back in and get back to it. So I agree. I don't think it would actually mean that more changes would happen. I probably stick with the majority of what they got.
He could bring a couple guys over from the Jets.
Of course.
Remember, that entire staff got fired. So Ulbrich, who was his defensive coordinator with the Jets, he's already in Atlanta, but there could be some lower level guys. I think that if Ulbrich were still out there and if he weren't getting a defensive coordinator spot, this is something that I floated on Twitter. Danny G floated it on Twitter. He's a great follow. And I retweeted him and was talking about it. Yeah, I love that guy. Don't know who he is, but he's an awesome.
No, only know from his profile picture.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, he's like, well, what if Ulbrich doesn't get a DC job and Saleh does come to the 49ers? This Ulbrich, who's from the South Bay, who played a decade for the 49ers, does he come along? And maybe he's a defensive coordinator in waiting, because it does appear that Saleh is getting a lot of head coaching interest, so maybe he'll be gone after only a year. All possible. What's really interesting, though, is I think the coach in waiting or the coach in development right now on the 49ers staff, this is a longer range plan, might be KJ Wright. And KJ Wright overlapped with Saleh in Seattle, right? Saleh in 2013 on the Pete Carroll staff was there. Now the 49ers have KJ Wright, who everybody's worried about continuity. And it is a worry that you should have, but it's also a problem you would like to have. You would like to have the problem of trying to maintain continuity, because it means that you're doing well and your coaches are getting hired by other places. And so if the 49ers are looking at somebody on the staff right now to be their D'Amico Ryans of the future, because D'Amico rose up the ranks really quick from linebackers coach to defensive coordinator, I think KJ Wright might be that guy. And KJ Wright, I think, would really enjoy working under Robert Saleh, who he played for back in 2013 and won a Super Bowl with in 2013 for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, that's an absolutely phenomenal call right there. It was KJ Wright's first year with the 49ers last year, correct? He was quality control?
Quality control, but worked almost exclusively with line. I don't know if they gave him the title of assistant linebackers. They might have at a certain point, but watching him work, he was there with Johnny Holland working with the linebackers.
Yeah, I mean, to be able to work under Johnny Holland and then be able to parlay that into working again with Robert Saleh. And 49er fans know KJ Wright well from his playing days, playing against him in Seattle. Yeah, I agree with that. He definitely fits that mold of a D'Amico Ryans up and coming head potential coach that could, you know, who knows where the potential lies for him, whether that's a head coaching job or a coordinator job sometime down the road. But no, that's a good call. He's a young up and coming coach for sure. And that's another good pairing for Robert Saleh in his return.
Now, one thing I want to say, I think that diversification is extremely important regardless of who becomes the defensive coordinator. And I think that the question that we got about the staff leads perfectly into this. But I'll bring back what I talked about earlier. In 2019, for a year, and it was only a year because he was a hot coaching talent, it was Joe Woods came in, and it was the 49ers DB coach. And they ran almost exclusively cover three in 17 and 18. In 2019, when they brought Joe Woods in, they started running a lot of quarters and disguising it with cover three. And if you talk to anybody, Richard Sherman taught me a lot about this that year. I remember having a lot of discussions because there was this big debate. Is it just because they got Nick Bosa and Dee Ford? Is that all that changed the 49ers defense? And right. Sherm was tremendously honest. I mean, wasn't this egotistical guy that said, no, like this was all the coverage. He said, no, most of it is the pass rush. I'm not doing much different skill wise, but Sherm did tell me that the coverages that they were mixing up that year bought the pass rush, I don't know, the 10th of a second, the 2/10 of a second.
Extra. All you need.
Yeah. That needed to get to the quarterback. So it was both. It was both. Right. And I thought what was really amazing about that locker room is that Richard Sherman, future Hall of Famer, you know, a guy obviously was a legacy to promote. He didn't get up and say, oh no, that, you know, the coverage is doing it all. He's like, no, most of it is the pass rush, but there is this one tweak. And he gave credit to the coaching staff. And it was Joe Woods who was working with Robert Saleh on that coaching staff. And Joe was the defensive coordinator of the Saints, so I think he might actually be available. So maybe they could bring him back and they could recreate what they did in 2019. But even if they don't, my main point is that it's the staff under Saleh and some of these coverage diversifications that are going to happen and some of the scheme adaptations that they're going to have to implement. Those are what actually make this cook. And that's what he's going to have to oversee, and that's what he oversaw so well for the 49ers his first time around.
That just gets me excited because I think the last couple years, at least under Wilkes, was where it really stood out to me on film, was the marriage between rush and coverage. It didn't feel like the coverage schemes were aiding the rush plan, and it just, they felt disjointed, and it felt like the 49ers were giving up a lot of third downs to opposing offenses, and it just felt like there was a disjointed feel to the entire defense. And I think, you know, we saw what had transpired because of that. And I think with Sorensen, the marriage was a little bit better, but I think, again, being a inexperienced coach to be able to pull the right levers at the right time, call the right exotics at the right time and disguises and things like that, might not have been ready for that. So you move to that next level where you're getting a guy like Saleh who can do all of these things, understands that, and can really put that into a game plan for the 49ers defense where you can really marry the rush and the coverage together. I mean, man, I just think when I think of perfect like marriages between rush and coverage, I think back to those Vic Fangio defenses where you have Ahmad Brooks and Alden Smith and Justin Smith just creating havoc with that front seven, and, you know, Chris Colliver and Terrell Brown and all these other guys being able to play freely and be able to do what they wanted to do. And the marriage of that unit, it was so beautiful to see because those defenses were special. And I think a part of that comes from that marriage. And so that's what I'm really looking forward to with the notion that Saleh is going to be the DC. It's just bringing that symmetry back together, the continuity. And as you mentioned, continuity is important. I talked about with the offensive line, how important that is. It's important across all of these teams. And it's why it's so difficult to maintain in this league, because everyone's churning and burning, churning rosters, churning coaching staffs, churning front offices. And so there's a lot of moving pieces. And when you can stay with familiar pieces, that's a good thing. in my opinion. Like that, like people are like, oh, it's a retread. You're just redoing the same. In my opinion, to be able to maintain that level of continuity, that is a positive because you understand where everyone's at and you can continue to build. And man, the 49ers need that right now on the defensive side.
Absolutely. And they need that. They need continuity, again, coupled with adaptability. And the one thing you were talking about, Nick Sorensen, and the one thing that was glaring that they didn't do that we talked about other teams doing to the 49ers is blitz. Yeah. I'm not talking about the elite. I don't want them to blitz like they're Wink Martindale or some, you know, Steve Spagnuolo. Those are guys that blitz almost more than anybody. But they blitzed 1.7% of the time with two or more men. That was the league low by a lot. Spagnuolo blitzed about eight times that rate with two or more men. So you talk about all these exotic pressure packages challenging the rules of these modern offenses. The 49ers weren't bringing them. And Robert Saleh, in his first stint with the 49ers, didn't blitz a whole lot. But if you look at the blitz rates with the Jets, with what he built alongside Jeff Ulbrich, they went up to about number 16 in blitz rate. They're league average in blitz rate. They weren't down at the bottom. So they evolved with the times.
Okay.
And that was a top five defense for the Jets until Saleh got fired and then it fell off a cliff, which is more evidence that he knows what he's doing, right? So Absolutely. So I think that the whole evolution with the game and the chess match requires some aggressiveness these days because we talk about the 49ers offense needing to solve that. Well, their defense better be bringing it against a lot of offenses that have descended from Shanahan's, right? And watching Saleh from afar, I think that he has adapted in that way, and he is the kind of defensive coordinator that can give the 49ers that nudge that it's needed in the blitz department.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that metric because, you know, covering the 49ers, I wasn't really familiar with those developments on with his defensive staff and all of those things. So that even makes me feel even better about the notion of returning Robert Saleh, because I know 49er fans from listening to them, talking with them, and getting their feel for what they've seen. They don't like the vanilla look, right? And we can see that as well when they're just rushing four, dropping into coverage, running your cover three shell schemes. You could take advantage of it, especially when you're not getting home with the rush. So being able to mix up the right looks, the right blitzes at the right times, there's a huge part of playing this position. So I'm excited about that. I'm looking forward to it for sure.
The talk is heating up. I mean, it's still in the same. Nothing is official. We've been talking about it since the start of the show. We expect the 49ers to hire Robert Saleh. We talked about Mike Silver's tweet. That is getting out there. People are talking about it in the comments section. It's all based on the Liam Cohn, Robert Saleh dynamic, and Cohn and the Jags appear to be zeroing in on a deal that makes Cohn the seventh highest paid coach or around there in the NFL. Robert Saleh, it sounds like, did not even fly down to Jacksonville for the second interview because Cohn was there instead. So it all got put on hold with Robert Saleh today. Obviously, the day after Trent Baalke was fired. So just wild to wrap our heads around the fact that it was the firing of Trent Baalke that opened the door for the 49ers, potentially. Until this is done, we'll say potentially, but opened the door for the 49ers to potentially bring back the prized defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh, who's been at the top of their wish list this offseason. Just crazy stuff. Hey, the 49ers aren't playing on January 23rd, but we're used to 49ers drama at this time of the year. It's not on the field this year. It's off the field this year, but we'll take it because it gives us something to talk about.
Absolutely. Always something to talk about with the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, hey, it was looking bleak there for a second, I know, for a lot of 49er fans. And so I think as we transition back to what it's going to look like, it appears the 49ers are going to get their guy. And I think this win, I think it is, and I'm curious to know what your take is on this, based on how last offseason went and how there seemingly was a lot of negative momentum throughout the offseason. Do you think there is anything to say for being able to get a win, being able to get your top candidate as a defensive coordinator, building off that energy and building that momentum throughout the offseason. Do you think that means anything to a 49ers maybe front office, coaching staff, to be able to feel like they got a W in the offseason before the season even started?
I think humans are humans and energy is energy. I absolutely think so. I always look back at the 2017 season, the way the 49ers finished that. I know that 2018, they went 4-12, but they went 4-12 because their quarterback got hurt in, what, week three that year. I find that surge to end 2017 to be an indispensable part of their tear in 2019 once they got the gang healthy and back together in 2019. So if they don't finish up 2017 with a winning taste in their mouths, then a lot of the good stuff that happens after has a lot tougher time coming to fruition. We'll put it that way. So in a similar note, I think that building momentum throughout this offseason, getting stuff to, you know, start happening in a good direction for the 49ers is probably really beneficial to this team. Because if you look at last season, it was just a snowball effect of bad things happening. And then it follows you onto the field. Even if it starts off the field, it follows you onto the field. So you definitely want stuff to work in your favor. I think people can relate in their own lives. You know, it's not just football. It's in life. It seems when it rains, it pours. But when the sun is shining, it shines brighter and brighter. And that's momentum, that's life, and I think that applies to football as well.
I think that's very well said, and I think it has 49er fans feeling good about where we're at, feeling like the 49ers are going to get Robert Saleh as our DC. So, man, coming away with their number one target feels nice.
Awesome, man. Well, I know that we got stuff to do. You're probably going to go want to react to this in case it does happen here tonight. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. It's expected to happen right now. Of course. So we started this show with all the drama, and we end it with the 49ers expected to hire Robert Saleh. I think that's a perfect arc. Bring it full circle. It's been fun, man. I always enjoy doing these. I know that once every couple months, we're able to line the schedules up. So hopefully we can hop on another one soon.
Definitely. Always great to hop on, talk with you, David, and talk ball. And I'm sure we'll be crossing paths here pretty shortly. But thank you for having me on, man. And it's always a pleasure.
All right, man. Thanks, Brad. Everybody go check him out. Brad at the SF Niners, or well, that's his personal account that's listed there, at Graham SFN, which stands for SF Niners. So great work, as always, by Brad. Thank you for joining me, man. And we will talk to you soon.
See you later.